to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative and explore whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect everybody, both locally and globally. And for this, the Arts Hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And I combine a debate topic with an arts interview in the show because I feel that discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways that we engage with the world. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. There's podcasts there of all past shows, and you can also connect with me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So again, the show website is itsaquestionofbalance.com. And this week, my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing Zeke McCarter, creative director and vocalist of the funk soul band Cone Brio. Formed in 2013, Cone Brio comprises seven musicians with diverse backgrounds, but a shared love of the vibrant Bay Area funk and psychedelic soul sound, pioneered by groups like Sly and the Family Stone. By 2015, the San Francisco band was a West Coast institution due to their captivating live show. And after releasing a debut EP, Kiss the Sun, and spending 2015 touring the US and Europe, the international online magazine Pop Matters declared Cone Brio the best new live band in America. In 2016, Cone Brio recorded their first full-length studio album, teaming up with legendary producer Mario Caldato Jr., known for his work with the Beastie Boys and Beck, amongst others. Following the summer 2016 release of their full-length debut album, Paradise, Cone Brio spent the second half of the year appearing in a number of high-profile international shows, including US festivals Bonnaroo, Lollapalooza and Outside Lands, Japan's Fuji Rock, the Montreal Jazz Fest, and European dates in London, Paris, the Netherlands and more, including national TV appearances on Holland's Musique and France's Quotidien. 2017 sees Cone Brio already out on the road touring and working on new material. And if you're listening locally, Cone Brio will be at the Catalyst in Santa Cruz on February 9th. Cone Brio has a reputation as being a phenomenal live band, due in part to Zeke McCarter's charismatic performance, which has been compared with a young James Brown or Michael Jackson. KQED Arts describes band leader and frontman Zeke as channeling the pained emotion of Otis Redding, the suave edge of Sam Cooke, and the solid dance moves, splits and all, of James Brown. Welcome to the show, Zeke.
Hey, thank you for having me so much.
So you're on tour right now, right? Are you in Colorado?
That's correct. Yeah, we're in Fort Collins, Colorado right now.
Did you have a good show last night?
Amazing show last night. This is the first show on this tour with the revivalists that we're on right now, the Pacific Northwest, and it was a sold-out show. A lot of these shows are sold out already, so it's amazing.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to you coming to Santa Cruz, and obviously people can check out your website, thebandconbrio.com, mm-hmm. to find out other tour dates. But yeah, we're
correct.
Looking forward, locals here, to you heading out our way. So I like to ask people who come on the show, I'm wondering, can you remember the first time that art of any kind, whether it was music or visual art or a book, had a sort of deep effect on you, when you realized that art has a power beyond just entertainment, mm-hmm. you know, that can really affect
yeah.
people?
Definitely. There's a story I've told a couple of times. It's my first memory as a human being, actually.
Hmm.
I just awoken up from a nap. I think I was 2 years old or something like that. I just woke up from a nap. And I was walking at this age. And I walked down the hall there was a dark hall. But at the end of the hallway was, you know, the living room where my aunts and uncles and my mother and father and cousins were hanging out and listening to the music. But there was this voice that was just really struck me. I followed it all the way into the living room, and I went straight to the speaker, and that voice was James Brown. And the speaker was bigger than I was, obviously, at the time.
Right.
And it was just, it has penetrated my whole spirit.
Wow. So you felt it on a totally non-verbal, kind of visceral
Oh,
level. Yeah.
I felt it in a way where they tell you not to get so close to the speakers. I felt it in that way. That 2-year-old felt it that way.
Gosh, that's a very early, powerful memory. Wow. Would you say you grew up in a creative environment, or did you have to find sort of art and music for yourself?
It's a balance of both. It definitely wasn't a focused creative environment. My mother was a teacher. She was an English teacher, and my father was in worked in telecommunications. He was an Army veteran and worked for different corporate companies. But there was a keyboard at their house, and my parents, anytime there was a, you know, family event, you know, Christmas or birthday parties or whatever,
Yeah.
music was always the spirit that I saw. Really had a positive influence over my whole family, including myself. And it, my journey with that and seeing that so many times, and also just having the passion for it, really solidified my purpose in it.
Wow, that's interesting. So, would you say that that experience with the speakers and James Brown was the first music that you heard that made you want to create music yourself, or did it not happen quite so early? Was it later when you thought?
It solidified the importance of music. Dancing was always, my mother said I was dancing so that I could walk. So dancing was just like my response to music. But in terms of how I can communicate through it, that came through time. You know, I had to learn how to sing, and that was developing my voice and like different. I used to grab a video camera, a little home video camera, and record in our attic just to hear how my voice sounded on playback, just to practice, you know. And that took some time, but that was a private thing for me. I didn't like, hey, mom and dad invested in me in this way. It was just like, hold on, I was molding myself in a private way. And then at different, like for example, elementary school, I performed actually the Beatles' "Twist and Shout," their version of "Twist and Shout" with my classmates. So it was like I would have these moments where I would present them what I could do, but it was always me molding and crafting it in a private space.
That reminds me of the whole kind of 10,000 hours thing. I don't know if you're familiar with that idea of the time,
Oh, yeah.
to put in to really become
Yeah.
good at something.
Oh, yeah. The passion for it was always there. It was just, you know, the time to tailor it myself. I really wanted to do that. So I'd spent a lot of time doing that at home.
So when did you decide that you might want to do music professionally as a career rather than, just for your own or other people's enjoyment?
When I was 18 and graduating high school, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. I was 17 actually, graduating high school, and it was time. You know, all my classmates were all deciding what we're going to college for and choosing our career paths and the reason why we're choosing them. And mine was music, and I knew that that wasn't the most traditional, but I knew that I had, at least I felt and believed I had what it took to collaborate with like minds and manifest that dream.
Well, as I mentioned in the intro, you have a debut album Paradise, and I'd like to play the track Lift Off from that. Can you tell us a bit about what inspired this track before I play
Yeah,
it?
I love to tell you about that. I'm so proud to tell you about that. There's a woman, she's a daughter of parents that actually started the first black-owned bookstore, and I think it's the only black-owned bookstore, or for the first black-owned bookstore in the nation, in the Bay Area. And this is a family that was pivotal in a lot of the civil rights. Not they were not they weren't so active, but they were pivotal in terms of providing information because this is a bookstore. The bookstore is called Marcus Books. Long story short, there's the daughter of it. She's a very wise woman, and I spent a lot of time with her in the Bay Area in a bookstore, and she really helped tailor my philosophy around music. She saw as Kiss the Sun dropped off, and she was like seeing things were taking off, and I was telling her how exciting it was, and so on and so forth. And she was like, "All right, don't burn out before you lift off." And that And that kit and just that lift off kit stuck with me, and so I wrote a song around it.
Yeah, that's very good advice because there's a lot of, as we know, really amazing, particularly musicians, I think, who have just burnt themselves out, and
Oh
to all
yeah.
of our loss, it's a shame, isn't it? But yeah, conserving your creative energy, and I think, is really important, and especially like you have such an energetic live show, it's probably.
It's right. You want to make sure it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yes, yeah. And I think, where the band is at the moment and everything, it's a good kind of symbol in a way, that lift off, isn't it, for where the band is going and all the rest of it. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to play now Lift Off from Cone Brio's Paradise. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Zeke McCarter of the funk soul band Cone Brio. And that was the track Lift Off from their debut album, Paradise. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back very soon after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes. Amazon, and it's a question of balance.com.
Ocean's black, but steam away. No white horses to play the game. And I wish I knew your name. Something about you in the rain. Did I or didn't I say it's forever? Well, I know I said it, baby, just goes nowhere. Well, we can do the things we want. We can do the things we like. But if we're taking all the time, well, I just don't think that it's right. I think that there's more to life than just that. I think that there's more to us than just that.
It's a question of balance music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Bookshop Santa Cruz is celebrating 50 years of independent bookselling in the community that we love. Visit Bookshop Santa Cruz downtown and join in the festivities as we celebrate our customers and the books that make it all possible. Bookshop Santa Cruz, celebrating an amazing 50 years in downtown Santa Cruz.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Zeke McCarter, who's the creative director and singer of the funk soul band Cone Brio. And I just wanted to let you know that you can get more information on the band and also their tour dates at their website, which is thebandconebrio.com. So that's the band, CONBRIO.com. And as I mentioned earlier, if you are local to this area, Cone Brio is going to be coming to the Catalyst in Santa Cruz playing with the Revivalists. So Zeke, I wanted to ask you, how does the band write? What's your process for creating songs? Is it lyrics first, melody, jamming? Who writes the lyrics?
We haven't crystallized one formula for writing music, whereas we're all, you know, equally invested in the creative process. So it's to our interest to include everyone's, you know, individual voice in that way. So I think sometimes, for example, I will bring in like a skeleton or something, or the drummer will bring in a skeleton or something, or the guitarist will start riffing, or he'll bring in something. Or maybe even Marcus, the saxophone, he's brought in stuff before. But in terms of how it all crystallizes, that is something that we all contribute towards. And some songs take longer than others in terms of how they need to be tailored. But musically, we all contribute in different ways. Sometimes some of us more than others, but in the big picture, all of us contribute. And so far, I've written pretty much all the lyrics. The reflection of my story.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's very common with bands that the singer writes the lyrics, if not, you know, the music, just because I think, you know, when you're delivering stuff, it's nice to be delivering, you know, your own kind of feelings, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. So why this style of music? What speaks to you about funk and psychedelic soul? I know you didn't start off with that, did you? You started off a bit more in rap and things like that. So
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I knew I'm very into just the history of it all. Like, even when I was a huge fan of Michael Jackson, I knew James Brown influenced Michael Jackson, and I was trying to figure out who influenced James Brown. And there's some names I can't remember right now, but, like, for example, big dancers like the Charleston, like the Moonwalk, and stuff like that was stuff that's used way back in, like, early, like, ragtime type of dancing, where, like, dance was much more animated and theatric. It's like, though I've looked at the history of things, and I love that. And so as I looked into hip-hop and was getting into producing, I was seeing that a lot of these hip-hop producers were producing soul musicians and musicians from, like, the 60s, 70s. And that's, you know, the music that my father grew us up listening to, other than gospel music, like Al Green, Marvin Gaye, Stevie, and a lot of classics. So when I got to the Bay Area, there was a space for that existed. They had a nice online music scene that I became infatuated with and just started studying so much, and figure out how all these voices work. You know, the horns, like, their personality, the organ, its personality, you know, the bass, its personality, and figuring out how that worked in that context, because I was producing stuff in, like, software, like Reason, at home, you know, so that was a completely different creative space for me. But the live scene kind of made it inclined me to really study and become more infused within the theory behind it all.
Yeah.
And so after I figured that out in the Bay Area and see how these pieces work, you know, the pieces came together in that facet and so crazy. And now we're incorporating other, you know, those elements that I originally started with the electronic sounds and the synth sounds with our new keyboardist, and Andrew's bringing in the more electronic feels now. So it's a good balance of a hybrid of both worlds that I was really wanting to collide for a long time.
Yeah. Well, it's a really great sound. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Well done. And it's interesting what you said also about the dance and going back to ragtime and everything. Because I think if you look back through history and the history of dance and how people used to dance together and everything, you know, it has all, certainly went through a phase of being a bit muted and everybody being a bit sort of self-conscious and everything. So, it's nice to think that that may be, you know, becoming more alive, and certainly is in your show anyway.
I think that spirit still reigns, you know. It's not as, I wouldn't consider it like the pop culture, like mainstream art form of dance, but I do see that spirit alive in the way that we bring the energy to the live shows.
Yeah, definitely. Your album's called Paradise, and the theme of paradise weaves through the lyrics of several of the songs. What's the meaning behind paradise for you?
Paradise is essentially a space that we create with our intentions, you know, in terms of the not only with art, but with our jobs as well, with our children, with our interactions socially. It's a space that people think of paradise. I've heard that used in, like, such a fancy, like, fluffy way, but also like I wanted to kind of juxtapose that feeling with some reality that we were dealing with and that I was dealing with. So it was like a blend of both. For me, like, my dreams are manifesting, but also, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement. There's also these other social movements in as well. It's just attacks on humanity that kind of cause you to kind of, I say that, it kind of distorts the image in a way, but it doesn't it doesn't dilute it, I don't think, because if we lose it, then we lose hope, we lose faith in moving forward. So it's like, this is paradise, but there's some tension in it, there's some pain in it, to maintain it, you know.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Well, the next song I'd like to play from the album is Money, and this song is a rejection of the pressure to gauge success purely in terms of money. What inspired this song?
Just the feeling, you know, some days I've had some interactions with money in the past. I was just so defeated by the concept of it and not really seeing how it, I guess just seeing the different ways that it kind of cannot work in your favor in certain situations, depending on where you are, you know, in this classist and elitist society. But to carry our dream in an on an international level, it took us channeling a faith beyond whatever our financial status were at that time.
Yeah.
And that was a song I wanted to kind of create an anthem to bring us up away from that, to uplift us from that feeling of defeated by money and the concept of.
Yes. Yeah.
Kind of give you a little more agency in the relationship with it. You know, like the if you got the power, why work for the dollar when the dollar can work for you?
Yes.
Like invest in yourself, you know, invest in your dreams.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, also there's a definite relationship with money in our society that's, in my view, becoming a bit unhealthy. And in my other part of the show, I've done some shows about, you know, what happens in a world when everything is for sale. You know, it's almost like every experience, everything is monetized. You know, it's a distortion in a way. So I was quite interested in the song for that reason as well. Okay.
Thanks. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay. So this is the track Money from Cone Brio's album Paradise.
Money ain't got a thing on me.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Zeke McCarter, creative director and singer of the funk soul band Cone Brio. And that was the track Money from their album Paradise. And just to remind you again, if you want more information about the band or to buy their music, you can go to the website thebandconebrio.com. I love that track, Zeke. I think the groove is so great. I mean, I love the lyrics and everything, but it's just such a great groove.
Yeah, nice, thank you. Yeah, that was one of the things that started by the drummer bringing in a feel for that verse section, and we just handed off the baton, and now we have the song Money.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I wanted to ask you, in the first song we played, Liftoff, there's a line that says, I want to fly high, so I'm willing to sacrifice everything I used to be just to make it into paradise. And being able to grow into something new, you have to let go of things, but change is such a scary idea for many people. I'm wondering how you've approached growing as a person in your own life.
Oh, so it can be scary for some of us, and how do I approach it?
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, having to let go of things, it's hard to do that. I mean, some people never even manage to do it, you know, so
I just
was intrigued by that line. I'm assuming you wrote that line. If you didn't, then you don't have to answer.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing to do is start.
Right, yes,
that's
true.
The hardest thing to do is start.
Yeah.
I think it was just more so coming from a place of seeing the transition and the evolution of our my life and our lives together through Cone Brio. I mean, because we all were in different, worked in different capacities before Cone Brio became our full-time thing. You know, I was different, like everybody was playing in very different projects and creating in different capacities. And I was actually teaching urban gardening for this nonprofit.
Wow.
On the side to urban youth in the community I lived in San Francisco. And I was doing that. We were all juggling a couple of things before Cone Brio became our focus. So once it became the focus, it was like, hey, this is here now. Like, not like we have to abandon who we were, but who we were is not necessarily going to fit in this context. It'll be so much of a reference sometimes for this new cycle of life that we're stepping into.
Yeah. I always remember reading a reference to doing stuff like that. They said it's like being on a trapeze, and to get from one to the other, there's that moment where you have to kind of hang in space where you're not holding on to anything. And I think that's often what scares people, is you do have to take risks to a certain extent to bring something new into your life, which is kind of what you've all done, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Things look unfamiliar sometimes, and you're like, maybe I should go back to what's familiar, but those steps got to keep moving. You got to keep taking them.
Yeah.
You know, eventually take you to the place where you're meant to be.
Yeah, absolutely. The songs we're playing from your album Paradise, Cone Brio's album Paradise, the death of the album is often spoken about, but I know that for Cone Brio it is important to produce a body of songs that go together rather than simply standalone singles. What is it about having a whole sort of album that appeals?
I'm sorry, that was something of that question was kind of cracked. I couldn't quite understand it.
I'm sorry. You know, people talk about the death of the album, how these days, you know, there's just people just release singles and there's no kind of relation between the tracks that are on an album. They're just kind of a collection of singles. But I think Cone Brio actually is trying to create an album that does hang together. Is that right?
That was the album. For Kiss the Sun, it was an EP, so it was 6 songs, and it felt like an appetizer for us creatively to produce. But Paradise was definitely in a space that we can explore more and create more of a journey. And that's something that we all value in music, the journey that it takes you on, you know, and the different emotions and the spectrum of narratives that can exist throughout it. And that's something that we wanted to create and try to do with Paradise. That's why the songs in the first couple songs, they flow into each other to like allude to that this is a, you know, this is a thread that interweaves throughout this whole record.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's great to do that because there's, I mean, obviously you create singles and they stand alone and they're wonderful, but I think you go deeper artistically if you can have a body of work that relates to each other, in my opinion, anyway, definitely. Well, we're going to go to a break now, but do stay with us and we'll be back very soon after these messages. Okay.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Danielle and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest this week, Zeke McCarter, creative director and singer with the funk soul band Cone Brio. And if you are listening locally, then Cone Brio are going to be at the Catalyst on the 9th of February with the Revivalists. So hopefully you'll be able to go along and see them live. They have an amazing live show. And if you're not local, then you can go to the website, thebandconebrio.com, and there's information on their tour dates around the rest of the country. Well, the next song I'd like to play from Paradise is Honey, which is a beautiful love song. It talks about slowing down for love, and more it seems like everything is speeding up with more and more being thrown at us and taking time to really connect. It almost seems like a luxury. Mm-hmm. So what inspired this song?
Where were we? In Chico. And we were gathered around this fire at the owners of Los Domain's house. And Ben decided to acoustic guitar, and he started playing Honey. And then I asked him the inspiration behind it, and he started talking about this relationship he had with a girl, a woman who was a musician, and she was just on the go always. And he was writing that as he watched her like move around the house and get ready to leave. And I just pivoted off of that in a way where channel some of the lessons that I've learned in love and some of the luxuries of it and slowing down. Like honey is slow, you know. Honey is honey doesn't age. You know, honey is sweet. You like all these beneficial things. Honey is like also good for your allergies. It's just like this essence of honey that I kind of want it to be metaphorically seen as our love, you know, like take it slow. It's going to be here. This is where we are.
Yeah. You know? Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. Okay, well, this is Honey by Cone Brio.
plus one equals one. How powerful. And you could be such a busy bee, but save a little honey for me. I could be such a busy bee, but I'll save my honey for thee. We could both be the busy bee, save a little honey while we take it slow.
Was the beautiful Honey from Conebrio's album Paradise. It's such a beautiful song, and I like the line, we've been doing this for many, many lives. It kind of brings in the element of the possibility of love being timeless and eternal.
Yeah,
it's a really special song. I also wanted to talk about, there's a song on the album, which I don't think we're going to have time to play, unfortunately, but called Free and Brave, which is the band's most political song, and it's got a great video on YouTube that listeners could check out. And the composer Robert Schumann said, to send light into the darkness of men's hearts, such is the duty of the artist. And this song seems to me to be finding light in darkness, and I'm just wondering if you can tell us a bit about what inspired this song.
I wrote this song a couple of years ago, actually, after the death of my father. And I was, I'm the oldest male in my immediate family, so that the role that I feel like I was molding into was much more of a, I felt more responsible in a way earlier on. So I was thinking of life in a national sense. It's like how we, as an American citizen, and how I wanted to move forward contributing as a citizen, and just trying to give it some, how do I say this, by using the teachings that my father, it taught me of making the most out of what you have. I wanted that song to be a reflection of the positivity and the light that he is still within me, and of the light that I wanted to continue to carry on the music.
Yeah. I mean, your father died in difficult circumstances, I understand, and I imagine it could be easy to take that and that become everything, and like you say, forget the kind of light I'm very interested in a psychologist called Alice Miller, who studied creative artists, and she writes about how art of all kinds can help people process trauma and difficult events, whether they're events they've experienced themselves or events that they've witnessed. I'm wondering if you feel art can have a healing effect both on those making it and those experiencing it.
I truly do. I truly believe that. And that song definitely had that feeling for me for a while. But before it became like known, it was that song for me. I would bike around the city listening to that song, and it would be like my anthem to keep me motivated, keep me optimistic, and keep the momentum going. So it definitely helped heal during the time of trauma, but also during the time of transition. Like, life is not stopping now, you know, and my family is very hurt and still mourning, but that light must still be carried on. And I felt like that is the energy that I was kind of working with at that time, and it came out through that song.
Yes, yeah. And I think, you know, what comes out of the song also is, you know, however dark things seem, there is always light there, kind of what you were saying about paradise earlier, but sometimes it can just be hard to see it, or we don't look for it, you know.
We don't look for it, or we just constantly fed things that distract us from it, that keep us away from that reality based on some other agenda.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm really interested in how music affects us as a society. And the ancient Chinese believed that civilizations were shaped by the kind of music that was performed within them, and that the Tang dynasty kept 14 court orchestras to ensure the vibrations of their empire were auspicious, you know. And Confucius believed that music had a hidden significance, possessing tremendous power for good or evil. And certainly, you know, we think of music as reaching across boundaries and bringing people together in ways that perhaps other things can't. But I'm wondering, do you ever think at all about the vibrations of music as well as the lyrics, about how music does shape society?
Oh, of course. I feel so obligated to be responsible and aware of that, especially as our fans are now not just local fans or international fans. So as people respond to these messages that I was dealing with, you know, on a personal, more local level or national level, it's very inspiring and also illuminating to see that these messages translate on an international level. And so that only solidifies the truth that music and the arts, and that there's these factors, these things, these essences are what unifies us in ways that help kind of create a connection between the cultures and
all of the
beliefs around it. And I think those pains that I've dealt with, I'm sure that those are similar. I've seen in the audience, those are similar pains that other people have dealt with and endured through as well. And it expressed to me like that song is it's very inspiring for me, and I'm glad it exists. You know, it may not be on, you know, the mainstream radio, but it is a song that I usually made to the radio in Japan. It was like number 8. That was great. But it's a song. It's a song. I guess I saw it as to really try to speak to the soul of a person, and that has endured through trauma and pain.
Yes. Yeah. And I think also, you know, you can have a really deep effect on people, and it still be uplifting. I mean, that song is about difficult, very difficult, traumatic things, but it's also super uplifting, you know, and that's the power, I think, of the vibration of music as well.
That's right
And also saying important things, you know, the art has to be good for it to work, you know what I mean? And it's it doesn't matter what that song was about, it works as a song. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's really important too. You know, you have to have the art has to really, you know, work. And then what is spoken within it is just so much more powerful than, you know.
Yeah, music's first. Music comes first. That's a lot of, sometimes I'll write lyrics first, but a lot of times I'll respond to what the music is saying. Like, what is the emotion of this music saying? And how can I translate that with actual literal words?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things I like about Cone Brio's stuff is that it the lyrics and the music really weave and work together. I mean, sometimes you hear songs and you feel like the lyrics were an afterthought or that they just don't mesh, but they really organically just weave together beautifully, I think. So
thank you for acknowledging and sharing that with me.
Yeah. So Cone Brio is touring extensively. You've got a new single coming out. Is there any time to work on new material?
Oh, yeah. I'm going into the studio today. I'm in Colorado to track some vocals for us. A couple of songs that we're working on that we recorded back in the city before we left.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, but it must be so tiring being on tour too, isn't it?
It's our job. It's what we do. It's fun.
You've got boundless energy, I think.
It's a lot of work, you know. Think, oh, we just rocked the show. We can chill in Colorado today. It's like, no, we got to record on the go. We got to move on the go.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great talking to you. And as I said, we're really looking forward to having you here in Santa Cruz. And you know, wish you all the best on all the tour dates you have before then on this tour you're on with the Revivalists.
Yes, thank you so much, Ruth. This is an amazing interview. I love all the questions you asked, and I love that you really are invested in the sound and music and our message. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I think it's a great band, and you're going great places, I'm sure. So thank you again for your time.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, just to remind you again, you can go to the band's website, thebandconebrio.com. Check out lots of information about them. And also, you can go to the show's website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. And if you like this interview, share it with your friends, then go to itsaquestionofbalance.com and find it there. Thanks for listening, and I will see you next time.